The Culture Show. I'm Jerry Bowen. We move to the stage now, where marquees are burning brightly this holiday season with a whole roster of plays and musicals and extravaganzas populating area theaters. The 2023-24 performing arts season has been a bountiful one so far, and the rundown of current productions has created a paradox of choice. So, joining me for Balancing Acts, where we preview and prioritize what to see, are Joyce Kilhaywick and Chris Ellers. Chris Ellers is a lifestyle editor and arts critic at Edge Media. Joyce Kilhaywick is an Emmy Award-winning arts and entertainment reporter, president of the Boston Theater Critics Association, and you can find her reviews on joyceschoices.com. Joyce and Chris, it's great to have you both here.
Oh, we're thrilled to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So before we dive into what people should see or maybe should not see on the theater stages right now, let's just take a moment to talk about where we are. This is the second year really coming out of COVID with the theater season back on track, theater companies back on track and with productions. Joyce, how are we kind of back to a full-fledged theater scene?
You know, I don't know that we're back with a full-fledged theater scene in terms of there being as many productions as there used to be, but I will tell you I am feeling an incredible renaissance ever since the Elliot Norton Awards, which is our year-end theater awards last year.
Our local version of the Tonys.
Absolutely. We sold out the joint. There were new voices in the hall. People were so excited to be there. It was like a big revival meeting. There's so many more voices and so many more works being introduced to the canon. And this is what we've been missing. It was a sea change.
Well, what do you think cracked open? Because I was there that night as well, where all three of us are on the Boston Theater Critics Association selecting nominees and winners for the theaters in our awards. I was there. I felt that energy like I'd never felt before being at the Huntington Theater. What happened, do you think?
Well, we hadn't been together in about 3 years, so people were desperate to network with each other. But it was a very different audience. I mean, it was just a very different, vibrant vibe. But I think it had a lot to do with the work that we honored. I mean, Chris?
Yeah, I think the work was honored. I think what was fascinating was the age of people participating in the awards that year. Those who were nominated, those who were performing, skewed much younger. Mm-hmm. And I think that signified kind of what you were saying, a sea change in the direction of theater in Boston. It was the old guard hasn't gone anywhere, but you can see in the wings there's this thrilling new
extraordinary diversity, people we've never seen on the stage before, telling stories we haven't heard before in new works. It was dynamic, and I think we're still moving on that energy.
Well, speaking of that energy, let's transition now to some of the shows that people can see on stage, including a show that most people had not seen before because it played in New York. It won a bunch of Tonys, but COVID ended any hopes it had of touring at least this part of the United States. That would be The Band's Visit, which is presented right now by the Huntington Theater Company and Speakeasy Stage Company. Chris, you look rapturous just thinking about it right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where you just feel like you're floating in time and space and this beautiful thing is unfolding in front of you. It defies almost belief. Like when you're watching it, it's a play and they address this in the musical. Not much happens. It's not a very remarkable day. It's not, it's not a very remarkable group of people. It's just the merging of cultures and time and it washes over you like this beautiful, beautiful painting. And it's just, it's one of the most stunning things I've seen recently.
And Joyce, before we get to you, just a background, that place where nothing happens is Israel, where this Egyptian police band accidentally lands. And so we have this meeting of the cultures and personalities and just regular people one day and one night in the life of these two cultures coming together. Joyce, before we get your take, Jennifer Apple from the cast performed Omar Sharif from The Band's Visit on Boston Public Radio last week. Here she is.
Dark and thrilling, strange and sweet, Cleopatra and a handsome thief, and they floated in on a jasmine wind. Kultum and Omar Sharif, and they floated in on a jasmine wind. Kultum and Omar Sharif.
I'm sure I probably speak for all of us when I say I could listen to that on an endless loop, and I think I did after I saw it in New York and then again here.
I did. It was an earworm for me for weeks, that song. I mean, and we need to say the score by David Yazbek, gorgeous Middle Eastern exotic melodies.
By the way, he'll be on the Culture Show tomorrow.
Oh, perfect. I mean, that really begins to make this show come together because you've got this very promising premise. Not much happens, as Chris said, and then everything happens between people who are so different. And they, if they could have been prescient enough to have programmed this at this time on this earth with the conflicts happening right now in the Middle East, they couldn't have done a better job, because this show actually goes where the arts go that no one else and nothing else can do. The arts go to those places, straight to the heart of what unites us. And it does it in a way so that we can sit back and see it reflected back to us. You feel with them the connections that are being made. And there are no easy answers. It's not sentimental, but something deeply sad and profound and uplifting happens at the end of that show. And you feel that growing. Everybody's heart sort of beating together.
It was so funny. My seatmate, my date that night turned to me in the middle of the show and said a little bit out loud, "I love being here." I mean,
yes!
That's the kind of response it engenders. It was beautiful. So let's stay with the Huntington for a moment and talk about the Heart Sellers, which is also, there's not an explosive moment here. This isn't a huge show, but this is a show about two Asian American women who come together on Thanksgiving because they're the only people who look like each other in this town. And they find their way as their husbands are off working. They come together and explore what it means to be a newly arrived immigrant in 1973 America. Chris, what did you think?
I think in a similar vein of the band's visit, not that there's, you know, musicians and all of that. It's a two-hander. It's a quiet, gentle play. But it has some similarities in the way that it dramatizes togetherness, aloneness, culture, complicated feelings of belonging. And like a band's visit, you leave thinking about these people and wondering what they're doing. And the performances couldn't have been more perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, the play takes place in real time, so that's always a challenge. It starts off and you're like, what is going on? And then you just fall in love with them. And the performances are brilliant. I could not recommend it enough.
Did you agree, Joyce?
I completely agree. In fact, I didn't know what to expect from The Heart Sellers when I first heard it. I'd never heard of this play. All I knew was 90 minutes straight through, no intermission. And I thought, yes, I love that. And, you know, it begins sort of like a comedy. There's these two Asian women trying to celebrate Thanksgiving, how to cook a frozen turkey, you know. Then they start musing on pornography and Disneyland and, you know, all kinds of funny things. And it's almost like Lucy and Ethel. And then slowly but surely they start to talk about the dark politics of their respective countries. And that leads them into really talking about and giving voice to, in the most incandescently beautiful poetic language, what it is to feel alone, to feel estranged in ways that I never fully understood the immigrant experience before. The estrangement one feels not only from the past you left behind, but from the future children you will have that will be born in America and also be different from you. So they are adrift in the present. And then there's this incredibly resilient, triumphant coda at the end where they insist on their dream. They're going to hang on to who they are in a world dominated by men and warmongering people. And you leave feeling elated and optimistic in a way that's so profoundly necessary. Again, in a way that the arts make so clear and we all felt it.
And I felt it too. I also loved this. So just to recap for our listeners, the band's visit is on is playing through December 17th, the Heart Cellars through December 23rd. By the way, anybody who's listening will have all of the recommendations that we have listed on the Culture Show's website. That'll be posted soon after the show. So let's move forward to something a little bit different. The Rocky Menorah Christmas Show by the Gold Dust Orphans. I'm looking at you, Chris. First of all, for people who have not been indoctrinated, who are the Gold Dust Orphans and why is perhaps this not a show that people would expect?
Yes, Chris, tell us about that.
Well, aside from the full frontal nudity.
I have not seen this show yet.
Within the first 5 minutes.
Okay, the first 5 minutes. There is, you know, I have to say that it is probably my favorite holiday tradition. The Gold Dust Orphans, they do one show every Christmas. You know, they're a scrappy bunch of theater makers, and Ryan Landry is a genius. He stars in this as Mrs. Grinchley, one of his creations.
And he's the visionary mind behind the Gold Dust Orphan, writes all of these pieces.
Yes. Yes. It's a wild ride. You always go in there, you have zero idea what's going to happen in front of you. And then at the same time, you have zero idea how they're pulling it off. Because it really runs like the most well-oiled machine imaginable. There's like 300 things happening on a little stage at once, and it goes off without a hitch. It's so flagrantly creative, and you marvel at the everything from the costumes to the video montages that they've put together to accompany the entire show. It's really just, it's a blast.
I'm about to see this later this week. It's our Boston Public Radio holiday party. We're all seeing it together with Jim and Marjorie. So
hang on to your hats. I mean, really, it's raunchier than usual, but it is. Oh, absolutely. They break every taboo. But, you know, that's part of the genius of this. They really pull the rug out from under everything we hold so seriously. Politics and religion. They say the unsayable. And I think it's to soften us all up, get us laughing, so that really and truly, like the shows at the Huntington, it's about togetherness. And he pulls that off. This is really, they're all having so much fun. They're trying to crack open all the barriers and things that hold us apart. And they do this by satirizing all of these things and saying the unsayable. And there's like whip crack timing and great voices, tap dancing, gymnastics, get ready. There's an incredible movie montage that has everything from Bambi to that head explosion in Scanners. I mean, it's crazy. The music is from Hendrix to Hello Dolly. And he is a genius. He makes, it's like a Frankenstein of parts, but it's what a monster he's created.
No, it is the most enjoyable thing too. And the crowds that come, I mean, this is so much part of the show because we're all in kind of a smaller space, not your typical theater space. Now they've moved to South Boston and you have an audience coming in with expectations through the roof. So that just, I think, adds to the energy. Well, that's it. So we have three hits in a row so far. Well, we're talking about the local theater scene with Joyce Culhawick and Chris Ehlers. The conversation continues. I'm Jared Bowen. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Culture Show. I'm Jared Bowen. We're going over the local theater scene, and I'm joined by Joyce Kilhaywick, president of the Boston Theater Critics Association, and Chris Ellers, lifestyle editor and arts critic at Edge Media. So we're going to move forward now for people planning their holiday schedules and what theater they can see for the rest of the year, because we only have a few days left of the year, it seems. Joyce, what's coming up for you that's a must-see that's coming up at the ART, I believe?
Oh, yeah. The ART, it's Real Women Have Curves. And that was a movie. I don't know much about it. I'm sort of looking forward to that. But what I'm really looking forward to is something that's at Central Square, and that's coming up in January. And they do this series of plays where they partner with the Catalyst Collaborative at MIT. So they do plays about science and often women in science, untold, unknown stories. They've got something coming up called Machine Learning. It's about artificial intelligence. There's an app named Arnold, I guess after the Terminator. And it's a nursing app that was created by a computer scientist named Jorge to provide treatment for his father, who has been estranged and is also ailing, and it's what happens there. He's got to make some decisions about who's really taking care of him, et cetera, et cetera. Don't know. Haven't seen it, but it's exploring a topic that is on everybody's mind, and to what extent do we rely on, can AI replace us or not, et cetera. I don't think so, but, you know, I'm not worried. I'm more optimistic than that.
Oh, boy. Well, we'll have you back. We'll have that a whole other debate on
another
show.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing.
I'm a little bit worried about this one, but Chris, AI, that is. Chris, what's on your agenda for the must-see coming up?
The thing I'm most excited about opening this weekend is Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf at Theater Uncorked. Shauna Dierick, who is a fabulous local actress, she's taking on Martha. It's the perfect role for her, if you've ever seen her in anything. And Brooks Reeves, who Boston audiences will know from many, many different things, from his participation in Imaginary Beasts to Apollinaire Theater. He's playing George. That, to me, seems like the perfect matchup of George and Martha. It's not quite festive for the holiday season.
No,
but
it's not.
But for some of us, it's our idea of a holiday treat.
Well, in that battling, maybe it gives us a little artillery for our own family gatherings coming up. I have to say, one of the ones that I'm looking forward to, in addition to Real Women Have Curves, which, Joyce, as you said, people might know from the film from 2002, and then maybe even the 1990 play, this has been adapted into a musical. It's at the American Repertory Theater, which means, like many shows, it could be going to Broadway, so this would be your chance to see it here. So that launches very soon, in fact, December 6th. The other show I'm looking forward to seeing, because I've seen it already, but Greater Boston Stage Company is restaging it, and that's called All Is Calm, and it's about the Christmas Truce of 1914, when the British and German troops on Christmas Eve stopped fighting. Talk about resonance today, like the band's visit, stopped fighting so that they could sing Christmas carols, so that they could play soccer, they could exchange gifts, and just try to find humanity for one night before they went back to fighting. Here's a little bit of the production of Greater Boston Stage Company's All Is Calm and their performance of Silent Night. Asking if this is based on a real-life event, and it absolutely is. It happened almost 110 years ago now, and when I saw this, I thought it was just so beautifully done. The singing, as you just heard, is a cappella, and it's wonderfully staged. So let's end this segment by a portion of the segment we're calling Curtain Call, and that is things that you have seen, not here, that you think should come to Boston. Chris, I'll start with you.
Well, I haven't seen it, but I want to see it. And I feel that Boston would be the perfect place for Sondheim's final musical, Here We Are, to play. I mean, either a different production or when the production at the Shed in New York has closed. Sondheim has a huge following in Boston, and it would be a treat to have to have that production come here.
And you're talking about a piece that surprised a lot of people, because we knew that he was working on this musical-ish. First act, it seems to be musical. Second, not so much. But we knew he was working on this, but it was never finished. And then, lo and behold, after he dies, it's staged in New York to rapturous reviews.
Yes, I have mixed feelings about finalizing someone's work after they've passed. Mm. It's always a question. You know, you've got to trust the creatives who got it this far. And from what I'm hearing, it's an experience unlike any other.
Joyce, what have you seen that absolutely must be staged here?
I haven't seen this, but I saw it a long time ago. Funny Girl. Okay, Funny Girl. Obviously, in 1964, it was on stage with Barbara Streisand. It was then revived with a new book by Harvey Firestein, and Beanie Feldstein did it, got terrible reviews, and then Lea Michele came in and
I saw that.
Oh, and brought it all back. And then it closed, and I'm not sure why. It just started a national tour in Providence. It's got 30 markets on the itinerary, but Boston is not one of them. It's in Providence, it's in Hartford. I want it to come here. It's a show I've always loved. I loved Streisand's movie. I saw that 3 times when it came out. I know every word of every song, every inflection, except I sound like a nun singing it. And Streisand, of course, is Streisand. The woman who is starring in this, it's her first leading role in a major musical. Her name is Katharina McCrimmon. I did hear her sing Don't Rain on My Parade, and it's gangbusters. I have high hopes. She's going to be fantastic, I think, in it. So I can't wait to see it. I love the show.
Well, the production in New York was fabulous. I didn't see Beanie, but I did see Lea Michele, and it's very funny because somehow I ended up with seats in the third row, which might sound
good.
That's
almost too close.
When you're watching a show for almost 3 hours and your neck is craned. However, it allowed me to just watch Lea Michele, and it was worth all of that because her performance was so mesmerizing. So I agree with you. So actually, Joyce, we're in the same camp because the show that I would like to come here that I did see in New York is called Shucked.
Oh, I've heard about Shucked.
It is so corny. It's a set of the cornfields.
So
exactly. About just trying to get out and see the wider world. But it's hilarious. It's given me one of my favorite jokes of all time. You never know how many people you don't like until you try to name a child. I mean, they just punchline after punchline after punchline like that. But you know what? It's the same thing. That it is starting in Providence, which has become such a hub for launching theater and national tours.
Yeah, what about that? Let's get that back to Boston, shall we?
Exactly. Well, to Chris's point, like Sondheim shows, when we were part of that Boston to Broadway corridor, I know that we're trying to get back to
that. I think our audiences are just too tough. They're afraid of us.
It's you, Joyce. It's your tough reviews.
Could be.
That's why.
Just hold them to a higher bar.
Exactly.
But there is hope out there because Broadway in Boston likes to keep their season a secret until like March.
Yeah.
Whereas other Broadway across Americas announce kind of early. Broadway in Boston keeps it hush-hush until the day of the announcement.
For all we know, it could be headed here. And I certainly hope so. I would love to see that show on stage. I never have. And I missed it on Broadway. And I don't know why that show closed.
I think it was contractual, and I think because I had so much conversation about the star, and it was kind of tempestuous when Lea Michele took over, that I think they thought, let's go out on a high note.
I guess. Well, they did. Melissa Manchester is also in this production, too, this one that's on tour, which is, so that's, you know, fabulous.
As long as they don't replace Don't Rain on My Parade with Don't Cry Out Loud. It's good.
By the way, a little shout out to Alex Newell, too, who won the Tony for Shucked, right here from Lynn, Massachusetts. About the performing arts from growing up here. Well, thank you both for this conversation. It has been fabulous to have you here. Chris Ellers is lifestyle editor and arts critic at Edge Media. Joyce Kilhaywick is an Emmy Award-winning arts and entertainment reporter, president of the Boston Theater Critics Association. You wield a mean gavel, Chris and I know that. You can find her reviews on Joyce's Choice. Again, thank you both.
Thank you, and congrats, Jared. We
thank
need this
you.
Show.
Thank you. We're happy to be moving it forward. And again, for people listening, for all of our recommendations, they'll be posted on the Culture Show's website shortly after we come off the air today. Tune in tomorrow for David Yazbek, the Tony-winning lyricist and composer behind A Band's Visit. Then we're getting Scrooged to find out what it takes to play Ebenezer Scrooge. I talked to two actors who know the role very well. Karen McDonald and David Coffey are both playing him on stage right now at area theaters. The Culture Show crew is Brian Bell, Max Chow Gillette, Kate Dellis, Molly McCall, and Chelsea Murs. Thanks to Sai Patel, Mark Manuelian, Gary Mott, Glenn Heath, Dave Goodman, John the Claw Parker, and Bill Piacentelli for their technical engineering expertise. Nikki Fifield, thank you. And if you ever miss us live here on the radio, you can keep up with all things arts and culture by way of the Culture Show podcast. Just go to Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jared Bowen. Have a great day.